I guess we'll begin. Welcome back to part two of the life and death of Samson. If we can begin with a prayer. Daryl, would you mind leading us a prayer?
Our Father in heaven, we thank you for this day. Thank you for the opportunity to come and study from your word. And pray that you'll bless this study that we're having about the Old Testament judges and other characters. And pray that we will learn things that you would have us to from their lives and events. Pray that you'll be with Jesse as he conducts the class and help us as students to listen attentively and to apply these things as you would have us. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
All right. So we left off with Samson last week and kind of an interesting point. So what I'm going to do first is I'll just ask as a general question, what do you guys think of Samson so far? What do you think, given what we've last seen of him? What would be some defining words other than strong?
I'd say confusing.
Confusing, yeah. Impulsive, maybe? Yeah. Well, confusing is a good point, because he's got all these flaws, but we see him do something so amazingly humble right there at the end of 15, right? So I had a review, but I really don't think we need it. We pick up in chapter 16. What was the last thing that the last chapter said? And he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. So we're somewhere in that 20 years. All right. Rick, would you like to read verses 1 through 3 of chapter 16?
Now Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. When it was told to the Gazites, saying, Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. And they kept silent all night, saying, let us wait until the morning light, then we will kill him. Now Samson lay until midnight, and in midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts and pulled them up along with the bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Hebron.
Yeah. All right, so we're jumping right into it. We left off last week, and we were talking about why is Samson in Hebrews? Why is he mentioned among all the faithful? And so we're back in this story, and you're back to square one. You're like, yeah, I have no idea. It does not make sense why he is mentioned there. So he performs this. So what we see from this story, he's, again, very physically strong. He's continuously making reckless decisions and morally icky decisions. And I think his strength is allowing him to kind of escape the consequences of those decisions. Dad, then, Andrew. Yeah, and we're going to get more into that later. Andrew.
That gate carrying, that's 40 miles.
Okay, yeah. And that's incredible. But we're back again to this is God's chosen vessel. He has these amazing powers. And we don't really see immediately why he has these amazing powers. We know he's fighting the Philistines, which is what God wanted him to do. So there is that. All right, now we're going to... Pardon?
Has the Spirit of God, at least.
Yeah, it's upon
him. To some
him,
extent.
Which is what's giving him these amazing powers. And now we begin the most amazing love story of all time, right? Daryl, if you want to just read verse 4.
After this, it came about that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah.
Delilah. We don't get much about her. We get that she was in the Valley of Sorek. I did have where that was, but I don't think I wrote that down. So I apologize for that. Don't even really know what exactly she is. We can kind of infer from his previous taste in women that she's probably a Philistine. But it doesn't say. And it's not really important. But what is important comes next if you want to continue in verse 5.
The lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, "Entice him and see where his great strength lies and how we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. Then we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver."
And verse 6 too, please. No, you're good.
So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me where your great strength is and how you may be bound to afflict you."
All right. One of the things we were talking about last week is the difference between Samson's parents, Manoah and his wife, and Samson and his relationships. Samson has consistently chosen women, seemingly not based off of personality. He's choosing them based off of looks. It doesn't say specifically that with Delilah, but probably was about the same way. But what are we already seeing here that we did not see with Manoah and his wife? Manoah and his wife had a mutual trust that was very deep for each other. So what can we immediately see with Delilah? First thing we're told, she's going to betray him. That's the first thing we know about Delilah, is she's going to betray him. And she's willing to for silver, which is kind of interesting. File that in the back of your mind. So she asks him what will make him weak, and obviously he's not going to tell her, right? So let's continue. Let's not get ahead now. Dad, if you would like to read verses 7 through 9.
Samson said to her, "If they bind me with 7 fresh cords that have not been dried, then I will become weak and be like any other man." Keep going.
Through 9, yes.
"Then the lord of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh cords that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in wait in an inner room. And she said to him, 'The Philistines are coming upon you, Samson.' But he snapped the cords. The string of tow snaps when it touches fire, so his strength was not discovered."
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead and read verse 10 as well.
"Delilah says to Samson, 'Behold, you've deceived me and told me lies. Now please tell me how you may be bound.' He said to her..."
That's good. Thank you. Okay, so what do you guys think about this? She asks him, "Okay, you're the big strong man. How do I make you not strong?" And he tells... I don't think he has either. I think it actually makes pretty clear he hasn't. So this time, maybe it's just the wife wants to know his secret, which maybe that's even reasonable. Any thoughts on that? Yeah, I don't know that he has seen them, though.
No, but she knew they were there.
Oh, yeah, she definitely knows.
Yeah, so it's not just about her knowing his secret.
No, but from Samson's perspective.
And the fact that Samson keeps doing this over and over again, I think... he just thinks he's strong, and nothing is going to change that. He's going to be able to defend himself, so I don't think he cares.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, that's my impression anyway.
Yeah, the next thing I have written in my notes is, now obviously he's caught on, and he's not going to fall for this again. ...
Testing me to see if I can do this. Yeah. Whereas the last time, he knows that it is literally his strength.
Yeah. So let's keep reading through the story. Andrew, would you like to read verses... 11 through just read 11 through 14.
"And he said to her, 'If they bind me with new ropes that they have not been used, I shall become weak and be like any other man.' So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, 'The Philistines are upon you, Samson.' And the men lying in an ambush were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Then Delilah said to Samson, 'Until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound.' And he said to her, 'If you weave the 7 locks of my hair with the web and fasten it tight with a pin, I should be weak like any other man.' So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head, wove them into a web. She made them tight with a pin and said, 'The Philistines are upon you, Samson.' But he woke from sleep, pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And she said to him, 'How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these 3 times.'"
Thank you. Okay, so three times, and it's still not the charm. She still hasn't gotten up. So what I've got to ask, because I don't really know. I don't really have a good answer. What do you think is going through Samson's mind here? I have an idea. I personally think that what's going through Samson's mind is, well, you know, I can just keep doing this and I'll keep getting out of it because I'm Samson. I'm the guy who killed 1,000 men with a jawbone, and none of this really ultimately matters. So what do you think's going through Samson's mind?
Like gamesmanship a little bit. You know, he likes riddles.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
He still thought things were going to be the same. That he might have told her his heart.
Yeah.
You know, and but he said, I'm going to get up like every other time and I'm going to handle this. And then it said the Spirit of the Lord left him.
Yeah.
And I think he thinks he's got to have it under control no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I think is going on here.
Yes.
When they, Moses told them not to go against the people of the land, you know, they took the ark. I mean, they thought that, well, you know, we can go. We're Israel, man. We got the, they didn't win, you know.
Yeah. Samson's never lost at this point, which I think could be playing into this a bit. He has never lost now. Did you have your hand raised?
No. Like you said, he either thinks he's invincible, and if that's not it, I don't know how you can see it other than he's just really incredibly foolish and stupid.
Yeah, but. And I actually think there is an aspect of that in this. I think the prior two chapters have kind of told us that is at least somewhat playing into this. He doesn't really think before he does stuff. We've seen that. Usually the thinking comes after he's done something, as we saw with the fight and when he was bragging with the water. All right. Ray, could you read verses 15 through 20?
15 through 20. And she said to him, "How can you say, 'I love you,' when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies." And when she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. And he told her all his heart and said to her, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like other men. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up again, for he has told me all his heart." Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he awoke from his sleep and said, "I will go out as at the other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him.
Come on, Samson, right? You gotta be a little smarter than that. But, I mean, at this point, we have seen him already not follow the Nazarite vow, and things still work out pretty well for him. He's touched an unclean animal, and things worked out pretty well for him. He's never been beaten, as far as we can tell. So things have pretty well worked out for him. So I think there's an aspect here of, like, he doesn't think this is going to go awry either.
Fields on fire with the foxes.
Mm-hmm.
Have we seen anything that he does indicate major intelligence?
Not really. Yes, his call to God for water. That's kind of the only thing. And that, I think, was God kind of putting him into his place a little bit. So he has a capability for intelligence, but it comes kind of after every other option's been exhausted, I would say. And we see another thing that has already happened to Samson. He's worn down by her complaints to him, and Where have we seen this before? We've seen this 14 with the riddle. Yep. And I'll just read it. Then Samson's wife wept on him and said, "You only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me." And he said to her, "Look, I have not explained it to my mother or my father, so should I explain it to you?" Now she had wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted, and it happened on the 7th day that he told her, because she pressed him so much. So we've kind of already seen this play out in his life, and it didn't work out for him then, and we're going to see it's not going to work out for him now. But I think there's a deeper thing here. He shaves his hair, or she shaves his hair, and he believes that his strength lies in his hair. Is his strength really in his hair? It's God, right? It's a sign. His hair, the fact that he has never shaved it, is a sign of his dedication to God. And I think ultimately the cutting of his hair and this is like an ultimate violation of this Nazarite commitment. And I think God is kind of finally saying, "Okay, Samson, now you've kind of got to." I think there's more to it than this, but God is pulling off from him for just a moment here. Thoughts on that?
I think me and you talked about this like a couple weeks ago. It was that this, like you said, this is not the reason that he loses his powers. He has been slowly breaking his vows. He broke the one with the dead body. He's not supposed to touch anything unclean.
Yeah.
He parties often, which means he's probably drank wine. And then he breaks this one. So slowly, over the course of time, he has broken every single Nazarite vow. This is just kind of the final touch, the final thing. Also, the Delilah thing, there's the Proverbs that says, better to live in the corner of a rooftop than to live in the house with a nagging wife.
Yeah. When the angel spoke to his mother, he said no razor shall ever touch his head.
Yeah.
I mean, that was part
of... This is straight from God.
Now, that was, you know, the mother's responsibility to some extent at that point. But that was, you know, that was the direct command, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. We can't say that he ever drank wine, you know, didn't drink wine. There's nothing about that. He may not have. But what he has accomplished up until this point is to kill an enormous amount of people.
Yes.
Okay, so he's basically killing Philistines.
Yes.
He's getting rid of
it. And that aspect of it is good. That is probably the best thing that he has actually done.
Just that, you know, he has this great power from God, and he, with Delilah, he basically treats it pretty carelessly and takes it for granted, kind of in an Esau sort of way with his birthright. To me, it kind of connects a little bit that way.
Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing a little bit possibly of a, I don't want to infer too much, but I do think we are seeing a little bit of a Samson kind of thinks he's self-sufficient again, which previously with the, you'll recall, this is after he's fought the 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey. This is his song. "With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have slain 1,000 men. I think we're kind of back to that. I think he is believing he is self-sufficient. I think he understands he needs God, but I think he's become so kind of cocky and prideful within himself that he's not maybe depending on that as much as he needs to. And
look at athletes, you know, some of them, they start out seem like really humble. You like them, and out down the road, you go, what's gotten into this person?
Forgot where they came from, you know? Yeah, I think there's that. And there's an aspect of this story, I won't go too much into this right now, but there's an aspect of this story, it's kind of what happens to a person when they have this, like, incredible power. And Samson, we see kind of letting it go to his head. Samson is letting this go to this power go to his head. So now he doesn't have the power, and we will continue. Ken, would you mind reading verses 21 and 22?
And the Philistine seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. But the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved.
This is kind of the completion of that story. So what are your thoughts on what they do to him before I go into my notes? What do you guys think of what they do to him, blotting his eyes out?
It's absolute humiliation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, let's look at what Samson has previously done, just a few things. In this chapter alone, he has carried city gates, the city gates of Gaza, which I believe was a pretty prominent Philistine city. Previous chapters, he killed a lion with his bare hands. He defeated over 1,000 Philistines, and he always escaped. Right? He always escaped. Now, he is blinded, which was like the ultimate humiliation. He's imprisoned. He's chained. He's forced into physical labor. So, slavery, basically. The man who was once impossible to defeat has been totally brought down to the lowest someone can be taken. And I think we've already established this, but do you think God is trying to teach Samson a lesson here? Possibly? Maybe a lesson in, you know, when you do something, Samson, maybe talk to me, you know? There's also, I think, an interesting aspect of Samson having his eyes taken. Usually Samson's issues always start with him seeing something. Chapter 14, the first thing you see about Samson. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So he sees this girl that he thinks is pretty, and that is the thing that kicks off the next two chapters. The beginning of this chapter, now Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there, and he went into her. I mean, I assume he saw Delilah too. Do you think there was maybe some irony to this? That some of his issues have kicked off with this? And I have a further thing. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but I'll make this point now. It is interesting that once he is blind is really only the second time we've heard about him actually looking to God. Which is kind of interesting to me. Any comments?
Samson's so important that the lords of the Philistines themselves show up to this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's the main thorn in their side. We've already seen when Samson fled to Judah, the people of Judah were very willing to give him up. They were not going to help him. So I think it's safe to say Samson is the main issue they're having. Anything else?
Other betrayals in the Bible. The lords of the Philistines are bringing a king's ransom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Killing a lot of people, messing up their economy. Mm-hmm. He's getting ready to decapitate their leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anything else? His hair's growing back. Why do you think this is an important statement? The Bible does not mince words. Everything in there is important. Why is it important that his hair is growing back? Yeah. We're going to see in just a moment that he's kind of getting... in his final moments, he kind of gets back into a relationship with God that he's kind of thrown off a little bit. And I think this is a physical symbol of that. So let's continue here. Who would like to? Zach, could you read verses 23 to 25?
Now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon their god, and to rejoice. And they said, "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand." And when the people saw him, they praised their God. For they said, "Our God has given our enemy into our hand, the ravager of our country, who has killed many of us." And when their hearts were merry, they said, "Call Samson, that he may entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison, and he entertained them. And they made him stand between the pillars.
Thank you. All right. The Philistine rulers are gathering for a celebration honoring their god Dagon. I want you to kind of put this into your brain a little bit. What this might look like. This is a big party. Big party. Think of the biggest party you've ever seen and then enhance it but times 1,000. There's a lot of people here. People are drinking, who knows what else they're doing, right? And they call Samson out of the prison. And why do they call Samson? So that he may entertain us. Which is so we can mock him, right? We're pointing and laughing at him kind of thing. This is a humiliation ritual. And it creates an important theological thing here. Because what do the Philistines believe? From what they say, what do the Philistines believe? Dagon delivered Samson to us. Now what do we know? Who delivered Samson to them? God is the one who delivered Samson to them. So in the same way, not to get ahead of myself too much, but in the same way that Samson has to learn a lesson, the Philistines are about to learn a lesson as well. Zach, go ahead and read 26, verse 26.
And Samson said to the young man who held him by the hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them."
All right. Now this is important because he doesn't just want to be taken to any pillars because, you know, these old places, they had pillars that were just kind of there for looks. He wants to be at the specific pillars. What specific pillars does he want? Ones that support the building. Which is important. I also think it's kind of interesting. Earlier in Samson's life, again, going back to that previous point, he saw he would go after, he did. Now he's having to be led to somewhere. Going back to kind of that humbling aspect of this story. Rick, if you would like to read 27 through 29.
Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And about 3,000 men and women were on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, "O Lord God, please remember me, and please strengthen me just this time, O God, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left.
Just go ahead and read through the rest of the chapter.
And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. Then his brothers and all his father's household came down, took him, brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. Thus he had judged Israel 20 years.
Brings a whole new meaning to bringing down the house, doesn't it? I think it's important the narrator emphasizes just how many people are there. 3,000 people on the roof. I don't know if there's more. There's kind of an irony. They're, you know, calling to their God. You know, Dagon's defeated Samson. He's delivered us into, you know, he's delivered him into our hand. There's an irony that God is about to kill them all within the temple of Dagon. Samson's prayer. This is interesting to me. Notice what Samson does before he acts. He prays. Before he ever starts pushing, he prays. Now, I don't know if he mentally knew, oh, I'm not strong yet or what, but I think it's important that he prays first. Because throughout this story, it's been Samson sees, Samson wants, Samson does it. Here, Samson prays, God strengthens him, and Samson does it, seemingly because God has allowed him. Not seemingly at all. Because God has allowed him to, Samson does it. Samson is helpless here. He's in the worst shape a person can be in. There's another detail that I think is interesting here. Specifically what he asks, strengthen me, I pray, just this once. And then later, let me die with the Philistines. Samson's not even asking for his life. He's not asking for his eyes back. He's not asking for any of that. He's asking, let me make this final blow against the Philistines. Not anything else. He's not asking God to save him. I think his motives are a little mixed. I think you do have to consider he is also asking for revenge. But again, he's not, unlike the foxes thing where he just went and did it, he's asking God to let him take revenge for his eyes. He's asking for it. His final prayer is a genuine movement towards God. I think that is very clear. He's not doing this to just like get a one-up. His heart is there. And so he takes hold of the pillars. And he knows this, what this is going to be. And I think that's what the line of let me die with the Philistines is all about. He knows he's going to die here. He knows that, and he's accepted it. Again, he's not asking for anything. What do you think of that? Line, so the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those he had killed in his life.
It strikes me that there's a bit of a parallel here, which might not surprise anyone. And it's that the very thing that the Philistines thought would give them the victory is the thing that actually gave Samson the greatest victory over them.
And his victory came in death.
The sacrificing of his life, you know. So.
Yeah, I think my brain and yours are going to the same place here, and we'll get to that in just a second.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. But before we get into that, is there any other comments? I don't want to do my final kind of wrap up here without comments. What do you guys think of this? His final act. The final stand, if you will, although it's not much of a stand, it's a push.
It seems like it might be the reason that he's in Hebrews 11. Yeah.
Let's look at what's going on. Just a little breakdown here. His story ends with him finally recognizing that the strength that he had treated as his own through his life was a gift. And he has to ask God for his gift. He's misused that gift in the past, but here he's not. Which maybe that there's a little lesson in there for us, you know, the gifts you have, don't misuse. Know where they came from. Know who gave them to you. There's some other things. His physical eyes are gone, but spiritually he finally looks to God for help. He's asking God for something. He's weak, but God gives him strength. His life ends in what you could say is tragedy, but his final act, he fulfills his purpose. With his final act, he fulfills his purpose. The final image we have of Samson is not an arrogant man who's bragging about himself. The final picture we have is of a man who has had flaws through most of his life, but at the end asks God for his strength. And like Daryl said, I believe this is why he is in Hebrews 11. He's not a perfect person, but nobody in Hebrews 11 is. Samson, just from the outside, looks a little less perfect than the rest of them. But when he has those highs, man, they go high, don't they? But what Rick was alluding to, I think there's something deeper here. Samson is abused and mocked and beaten down. But you go further back than that. He was announced by an angel before his birth. He had a divine purpose given to him before birth. He was set apart from birth. He was empowered by God's Spirit. He confronted the enemies of God's people. He was rejected by his own people. I'm referencing, of course, the men of Judah who gave him up. He was betrayed by someone very close to him for silver and was handed over to his enemies. I actually think I'm going to end on time tonight.
Yes.
He was handed over to his enemies and captured. He was humiliated and mocked after his capture. He was used for entertainment and mockery. He was seemingly defeated by all accounts. I mean, you put yourself in the shoes of one of those Philistines in the Temple of Dagon. That guy ain't doing nothing. You've got him. But in his death was victory. After all that humiliation and being given up and betrayed and imprisonment and all that, came victory. And in his death would bring deliverance. Which is kind of interesting, because what is it that the angel says? I should have probably put the verse down. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. This is 13:5. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. So in his death is also deliverance. The beginnings of deliverance, but deliverance nonetheless. And yeah, I'm obviously making an allusion to Jesus. I think Samson is one of the most obvious types or shadows of Christ. I mean, you even think of, like, the pose at the end of his life. What does that kind of remind you of? And yet, at the same time, that's where the comparison begins and breaks down. Samson was a flawed deliverer. He needed a deliverer for himself. Jesus is the perfect deliverer. He didn't need any deliverance. Samson's death would bring judgment on his enemies. Christ's death brought salvation to his enemies. Samson stretched out his arms and killed many people. Jesus stretched out his arms and saved more than Samson could have ever killed. And ultimately, only one of them would rise from the dead. Because while Samson's greatest victory ended in death, Jesus' greatest victory began with his resurrection. That's the end of the story of Samson. An interesting guy, a very flawed man, but how many of us aren't? All of us are flawed. Every one of us. And Samson actually gives us all some hope that being a flawed person isn't the end. You can have more than just your flaws. And that's all I've got, so any comments, questions? If you have a question, I can make something up. Ken.
Maybe just me, but you know, it says at the end that he judged Israel 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe he had some good days.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't all bad.
Definitely. And I think I was actually talking to you about this on Sunday. I don't think he only spoke to God twice. But I think those two times were the most significant. Yeah. And I think you're doing Samson a disservice if you only dwell on his flaws. Because his highs were so much higher than his lows. Yes?
I think he did what he was intended to do.
Absolutely, yes. In his final moments, even before his final moments when he was fighting the Philistines in the past, but ultimately in his final moment, he fulfills his purpose to begin the strike against the Philistines. Yes.
Or even told a couple of times that, you know, that what Samson did was actually, what was happening was of God, that, mm-hmm. that God was using this mm-hmm. yeah. to fight the Philistines, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing with the first wife and everything.
Absolutely.
Who happened to be a Gentile. He took a Gentile wife. You can add that to your list. Yeah.
That's true.
What Ken was saying, and to go on with that, he by judging, I mean, obviously he was, he would make decisions, judiciary decisions, I suspect.
Yes.
Law decisions, kind of like what Samuel did, you know? I mean, maybe not as great like that, but, you know, it's basically the law in that, you know, of that time for those people.
Yeah.
And again, what they were saying, he didn't fail. He was never meant to end the Philistine threat. He was only just supposed to be the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And this would be an 80 to 100 year, depending on how you run the numbers, war.
Mm-hmm. Which, actually, come to think of it, he is the beginning. He is the beginning of salvation for the Israelites. Because Saul and David are still working off of what Samson began. So when we're reading about David and all that, just remember in the back of your mind, all of that was started because of a little guy named Samson, who was really, really strong. All right. Thank you all.